Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey everybody, welcome to Just for Variety. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. On today's episode, I'm catching up with Tyler Posey. The actor shot to fame as Scott on MTV's Teen Wolf. Since then, he's also become quite a prolific musician. He recently dropped his solo debut, Shut Up, featuring vocals by Femme and Travis Barker on drums. I caught up with the 29-year-old Posey from his home in Los Angeles to talk music, sobriety, his sexuality, and why he thinks fans are ready for a Teen Wolf reunion. I'll have Tyler Posey coming up after this short break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Just for Variety. Here's Tyler Posey. So how have you been? I haven't seen you forever.
Long time, dude. I've been dead, you know?
So
Teen Wolf is off the air. You know, a bunch of projects outside of that. So during Teen Wolf, I really got excited with directing and writing my own stuff. I really got on top of that after the show ended and just started filming stuff with my friends. I bought all this equipment. I love camera operating. So just a lot of found things that I've kind of like had to put on the back burner while I'm so busy with Teen Wolf that I've just kind of like edge of and just really hit the ground running with them. Music, just figuring it out, man. It's been a bumpy ride, but a fun one at the same time. And it's cool. It's interesting, you know?
And you have new music. So tell me about this song. What is Shut Up a song to someone or something? I was trying to figure it out.
It's a song to somebody, but you know, it's really relatable and very real and personal to me, but there's also some parts that are a little elaborated, you know, for poetic reasons for music writing and stuff like that. But for the most part, it's about me and my ex. I guess it's a little bit shut up to her and to myself. I got sober in quarantine, just to break some bad habits that I've had since I was a kid, you know, smoking, drinking. And so I was full on sober for about 5 months and just really trying to take care of myself. And I was meditating every day and praying and not to anything religious, just like a higher power and just feeling like something bigger than me in the world. And I was taking care of myself and being there for a lot of other people. And it was really interesting. But normally when I'm depressed, I would just turn to any sort of pot, substance, you know, anything, and just kind of try to numb myself that way. And my ex and I had been broken up for a little bit. I was telling her that I was sober and my life in sobriety and how that was going. And we started talking a little bit more and it just sort of kind of got back to a place that reminded me why we broke up in the first place. And it kind of depressed me. And it was the first time I was depressed without any substances to look to, you know, and I really wanted to stay sober, at least just try it out for a while. And I really had to like kind of sit with that uncomfortable feeling. And so that's basically what the song is about. The song is it's a culmination of like a couple of years of substance abuse, me with this girl and our relationship and kind of experiencing what it's like to be sort of depressed without being able to, you know, find any substances to kind of curb that, you know? So it's a pretty personal song and it's like powerful. And when I first started writing it, I was on a trip with my friend and my dogs in an RV in Arizona. And I brought my guitar with me and I started writing the song. And as it was coming out, I was like, wow, this feels really like like, this could be a good big song. And now it's on the radio, and, you know, it's just like, it was one of those moments where, like, it felt right from, like, the starting point, you know.
Wow.
Doesn't have a...
Well, I'm sober myself. I'm going on July will be, God willing, higher power willing, 8 years.
Good for you, man. Very, very, very cool.
It's the best thing I've ever done. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. Best thing I've ever done. And even on top of that, the better thing is being public about it. You know, I know there's the anonymity and anonymous, and we know all that. But, you know, my journey has been telling people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, if I could help one person, it makes it all worth it.
Of course, man. Yeah. So, like, before I got sober, my whole life, I was like, God, I want to be there for people, but I didn't really know how. Right. And then when I got sober, I was like, oh, I think that this is part of it. I think this is, like, part of my reason as to why that I'm here, is to help people. Even if, like you said, it's just one person at a time.
Yeah.
Because it helps you too.
How's your sobriety these days? How are you doing?
So when I first got sober, I definitely really wanted to, like, break these habits that I had.
Yeah.
And so that was most of it. Cause I never really considered myself an alcoholic. There was moments of substance abuse, that I felt like I had kind of control over, but there was a moment where it got a little scary and I felt like I needed some help and definitely wanted to, you know, not be this kind of, I just always viewed myself as a lazy pothead, you know. This is on top of that, you know, pot's kind of like the easy one, or I don't know.
Right.
So I didn't know how long I wanted to be sober. I've since started coming back into the other world, the other side of things. So I'm not, like, technically not sober anymore, but I keep in touch with everybody. But it's definitely not, you know, anywhere near what I was. I learned a lot about myself. I'm not completely sober anymore. Definitely nowhere near as intense as I was. But like you said, sobriety is, it really is the greatest thing in the world, because it helped me grow up. I felt like since I was about 14 years old, I've sort of stunted my mental growth from just, you know, not dealing with anything and dealing with it right. with weed or drugs or booze. And so the time that I was sober, I felt like it, like, kickstarted me growing up and, like, sped up the process of me kind of growing up and dealing with the stuff that I kind of haven't been dealing with forever. So being sober was, it was a really, really eye-opening, crucial, I think, process for me. And I think for a lot of other people, it wasn't just being sober that it was everything that it taught you, being there for other people, right. being there for yourself, diving deep into yourself, taking accountability, being grateful, everything under the moon. It was really, really, really crucial, I think, for me and my progression of my evolution. And right. now that, you know, dabbling again, I definitely have a better sense of it all. And I don't feel like I was the person that I was before, you know. And it's always interesting talking, because I was really gung-ho with sobriety and I loved it. And I was in the program and everything. And it's a little, to me still now, because I still fairly new that I'm back, it's nerve-wracking talking to another sober person about me not being sober anymore, you know, because, like, don't want to. I know that you're not judging me, you know, but there's that sense of, like, letting me and you and the whole program down. I'm very cool right now. Like, there's nothing worrisome or anything right now, but, you know, maybe down the line,
that's great. I'll
back to the program. And I love it. I love the program. I love the people in it. And at a certain point, the reason why I came back was that, like, there's this line that I wrote in a song, but it kind of sticks out in my head. It's that, like, I know more about everybody here than I know about myself now, because I don't know if I can never come back to this stuff again. I don't know if I'll do drugs again and I'll go crazy, or I won't, you know. And I kind of wanted to, you know, experience that for myself and see if I can trust myself. And so it's really an experiment, this whole entire coming back thing. And because I found my footing being sober, man. It was the first time I've ever had a routine in my entire life.
How has making music changed since you've had some sobriety in your life? You know, you're just more clear-headed.
Absolutely. You're more clear-headed. You do kind of, so from an artist standpoint, it's a little nerve-wracking tackling art not with a substance in your head. You know, you're like, okay, my whole entire life I've been writing music stoned. So am I going to suck when I'm not stoned? But you do tap into this like untapped sort of part of your brain. That's this really creative element that you've never really kind of expressed before. And or at least that was my experience when it came to writing music. I was like, oh, I don't have to be completely stoned out of my mind to write music. And it feels different. It does feel a little bit more, not, I wouldn't say intelligent, but like, it just feels cleaner.
And more real.
And more real. Yeah, absolutely.
You're in touch.
How tough was it? You know, you're on a show like Teen Wolf. I mean, listen, I remember I was there from day one. You guys shot to fame, you know, we'll use the cliche, overnight. How difficult was it knowing that, you know, you're going home, you're smoking weed, you're partying, you're getting into trouble, and all these kids, all these young people are looking at you and you're being called role models. Uh-huh. How much did that play with you?
Yeah, it was definitely weird because it sort of made me question who I was and who I wanted to portray myself to the world. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who I wanted, what version of myself I wanted the world to see. And because like MTV kind of, they didn't force us to get Instagrams or social media, but they were like, hey guys, we'd like you to get some Twitters and, you know, and I'm like, what is that? And so we learned how to Twitter and I'm very much unfiltered and it's kind of hard for me to be anybody else other than myself. But then there were moments when I would like show a little bit too much where I was like smoking weed. And I would like take a picture of it and my managers would like come back at me. They're like, what are you doing? You're not supposed to post this stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay. I thought it was not that bad. So the hardest part about it was just kind of finding my place in it. But then, you know, I figured out that like, you know, there's a certain demographic that follows me and I don't necessarily need to cater to them, but I should probably not, you know, there's a time and place for everything. And I don't need to post stupid shit of me getting stoned or anything like that. Kind of like a bragging thing. It's like, look at me, I'm smoking a bong.
Right.
So there was a bit of a learning curve for sure. But the real substance abuse and all that kind of stuff started pretty recently. You know, it was about maybe 2 years ago when Teen Wolf was already kind of over and I wasn't posting as much. And so it was easier for me to fall into this hole because I wasn't so active and kind of showing my personal life. You know, it was easier for me to just be like, okay, I'm going to take a break from the world, you know? So.
And now how many tattoos do you have?
I also just got a brand new
one. You got a brand new one?
I have over 40. Just got a brand new one. Let me see if I can show you. It's a little wrapped up right now, but my friend hit me up. It's a little bloody too.
Oh yeah, the clown. Yeah. Wow. 40?
Yeah, over 40. I counted not too long ago. It's kind of hard to keep track now. Maybe even 50 now. I'm not really sure.
Your managers tell you, hey, don't post a photo of you smoking weed. How many managers or people of your team are like, okay, if you're going to do the tattoos, put them where you could hide them so you don't have to.
That was a big thing for a long time. I got my first tattoo when I was 18 on my ribs, and the manager that I was with at that point, I had been with since I was 15. So she knew about me for a while. And so it was a thing. It was just for the longest time, I'm not with them anymore. And for the longest time, for so long, it was this sneaky thing that I felt like I was hiding from them. And I had to be like, like sneaky about it. It was just kind of this weird stress that I don't know. I wouldn't say it messed me up, but it made me want to express myself even more. You know, the fact that like, they were like, you can't get tattoos. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to get more.
You know? I feel like probably like when the world first discovered your tattoos, I feel like there was probably like the tabloid headlines, like see Tyler Posey's secret tattoo. And it's like, you're on the beach and they zoom in on your rib cage.
Exactly. Yeah. And that one, so I've since gotten that one removed through laser work. And then I got another one on top of it. So it's a different tattoo, but yeah, man, they've just been in my life for a long time. I've always loved them. Ever since I was like 12 years old, I used to like scratch like punk symbols into my arm, rub ink on it. It never worked. It never took, but one of those things. And then, you know, at this point now I'm really in love with the art and the history and the folklore of it all. So it's not just the surface thing. I really want to try to like make it deeper than just getting tattooed on the surface, you know?
So are you going to end up on the neck to the face or no?
Really the plan, you know, you know, maybe when I'm like 80 and I finally can have opportunity to do it. You know, if I'm not a successful actor at that point, you know, which I don't foresee, but who knows? There could be some 80-year-old tattooed dude that they need for a TV show or something.
I'm going to take a short break, but when we return, Posey opens up about his sexuality, his father's reaction to him coming out about being with men, and the possibility of a Teen Wolf reunion. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Just for Variety. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Here's more of my chat with Tyler Posey. Of course, I have to ask you about OnlyFans.
Yes, of course.
You recently said it seemed like you were a little conflicted about it. Like, you know, I do know, and I don't think this comes as a surprise to you, you know, as soon as you said you're doing an OnlyFans site, there were definitely people going on there looking for a certain...
Sure.
How shall certain material.
Yeah.
So you now have spoken about saying, like, you feel like, if I'm simplifying it, a little objectified.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you stand with that now? And is that just what comes along with being on an only, you know, having an OnlyFans site?
Man, where do I start with this? I don't feel that way anymore, objectified, because what kind of fixed that was that that's going to happen no matter what. If I want to, I'll go through my DMs on Instagram and I'll find worse requests than I do on OnlyFans, you know? So that for a while, it was just so apparent on OnlyFans, you know, if I were on right. a live, any comment would be like, you know, let me see more, let me show me more, show me more. And it was just all in your face on OnlyFans, whereas opposed to right. other social medias, it's just kind of tucked away a little bit. So mm-hmm. OnlyFans, a trip for me. Bella is my friend through the whole entire thing. She kind of helped me get into it. And she hit me up one time after I posted some pictures. She's like, this is more skin than you need to post on OnlyFans. Call me. And I was like, okay, what is this thing that you're trying to get me to? And the conversation with her and her manager at the time, who's now my manager. And I really liked his pitch. It was really cool. A way to be artistic and push out different content, new content, which I'm a fan of. And it's also been like a big experiment for me because I've never been a model my entire life. I've always been uncomfortable, a little nervous, just felt that like I felt icky modeling. You know, it's this weird vibe of just like having to pose for this camera, and I just never connected with it. And so it's a little bit of me kind of stepping out of that box and out of my comfort zone and trying new things. Plus, it also gave me a really good platform to be really openly open about my sexuality. And that's where I really figured out why I like OnlyFans so much, is because I do, it's everything under the umbrella that I love. It's being really in contact with my fans, releasing creative new content that people don't see anywhere else, and being really open about anything, you know, whether it's sexuality or drug abuse or, you know, anything. That's where I really found my footing, I feel like. And I think it was on my birthday, I did this live on OnlyFans, and they were asking me, you know, stuff that like horny people would ask you. Have you ever been with a man? Have you been with the opposite sex? What was it like? Blah, blah, blah. And I was just being honest about it because no one's ever asked me that before. And it's not like I wanted to hide it, but I just had never been asked that. I never found the proper time to kind of bring it up. Not like I was looking for a proper time to bring it up, but I was like, ah, fuck it. Yeah, sure. I have done all that stuff before. And, it was received kind of well. It was just such a like a split second decision. I didn't think about how it would be received or what kind of press I would get on it. But I woke up the next day and there was like all these tabloids about like me kind of sort of coming out as pansexual. And mm-hmm. even though I didn't label that, the kids, the fans or whoever wrote those articles labeled that.
The kids.
Is that. But I thought that was really interesting that like it just kind of broke down this sort of wall that I didn't feel like I put up. But it was easier for me to sort of kind of just be honest about all that stuff. And mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that aspect of it. So now I've got that with OnlyFans, just kind of this sort of real personal interaction I have with my fans on that website. Plus I'm really diving into sort of like really artistic shoots. Like I buzzed my head and bleached it and colored it for one of these shoots. And it was like just mm-hmm. very images. And I thought that was really interesting. And so I'm just really trying to make it artistic. But if I have to show my butt, I want to make it not like really funny, like not take myself seriously mm-hmm. and just kind of right. show, bring that to OnlyFans. Cause that's who I am. I am a little taboo. I've always been a little bit like edgier and sexually inclined and just kind of wanting to push the envelope in sort of a bunch of different ways. And I do feel like OnlyFans is a good outlet for that. And so, yeah, it took me a little while to find my footing. I did feel objectified a little bit. I felt a little like my mental health was a little on the verge of sort of some sort of break from it all because it was so taboo and so new, and it was a big risk, I think, early on to be a part of it. And I felt all the weight of that. It was really sort of kind of taxing on me. And there were so many times where I was like, this isn't for me. I want to pull out and just donate all the money that I made to some charity. And I still want to do something like that, but I do want to maintain sort of, I think, a presence on OnlyFans. And I watched this OnlyFans documentary on Hulu, I think it was, or Netflix.
Hulu.
And it was pretty interesting.
I think it's Hulu.
The whole time my girlfriend was watching it with me, and she was like, when are you going to show up? I'm like, I don't think I'm going to be in this. And then finally myself shows up, and like, it was just a saying that like, it wasn't as taboo as it used to be. And it's getting well received, and kind of like what Hugh Hefner was trying to do with Playboy. It's kind of the vibe of what's happening right now. So it felt good. It feels good to kind of be in this world of the like the OnlyFans, but kind of changing the face of it in a weird way, you know?
When you talk about your sexuality, going back to those days with, you know, earlier managers who were telling you, don't smoke weed, hide your tattoos, were they also saying, don't be open about anything you like sexually, whether unless it's hetero, cisgender, white?
So there wasn't anything too crazy that came up that would warrant that sort of response from them. I did have some leaked footage of me online a little while ago that was my fault, but it did sort of show the world that I am this sort of sexual, I don't want to say deviant, but you know, there's that is definitely not on the surface of what you normally see, you know? And so they did come to me for that a little bit, which is understandable. You know, I had some stuff leaked online, probably isn't favorable, but I didn't release an apology about it. And that made it easier for people to forget about, you know, I didn't bring attention to it. They wanted me to, they definitely wanted me to say like, look, I'm sorry. I'm ashamed of myself, which I wasn't. And I wasn't sorry. And so I didn't want to say that. So there was an element of that definitely, but there wasn't enough to warrant. I wasn't doing If I was still with that manager, with those managers, when I came out, I'm sure I would have gotten a shitstorm of just like emails the next day. Like, what are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. We need to talk about this. So it is nice, you know, to kind of be accepted and just kind of the manager that I'm with now is like the most accepting person in the world. And so there was a little bit of that, but it wasn't at the point where it's at now. So maybe the fact that I'm not with them has allowed me to feel free to sort of be open to stuff. So, you know, maybe they were in a way subconsciously sort of holding me back from kind of being 100% me.
And how gratifying is it to hear from young people that say, you know, not into the graphic details of it all, but it's like, thanks for being you.
It's really cool. I kind of like every now and then I'll go through Instagram, or if I find a message that seems particularly like they need help, like a fan needs sort of help and they're kind of on the verge of some sort of down, I'll reach out to them. And a lot of them started after I came out about that, and they were talking about like being gay themselves and not knowing how to come out to their parents and feeling overwhelmed at school. And so I started talking to a lot of them, and I convinced one of them to go to school. Like they're in college now and they're having a great time. Yeah, there's been some really, really nice, like chill inducing. Like I get the chills thinking about this. There's been some really good feedback from that, and just kind of really being able to connect with kids my age or a little bit younger, and just kind of showing them that like, hey, look, I'm kind of going through some similar stuff too. And like my dad called me the next day after all this came out. I'd never told him anything about this stuff, you know, and he called me. Hey buddy, just making sure you're okay. You know, I don't want you to get overwhelmed or stressed out. But he was totally cool about it. And I was like, yeah, man, I just wanted to like, you know, I just didn't want to hold myself back. And I had an interest in trying new things. And he was like, okay, well, I understand that. So unfortunately, that was awesome. Right. But I've told people, kids who are worried about telling their parents, my dad's reaction. And they're like, okay, well, maybe my parents won't be so hard on me if I tell them, you know. And so it's been interesting.
So when are we going to see the Teen Wolf reunion? I talked to Dylan O'Brien. He said he'd be up for it. He's into it. Yeah. Would you do it?
Absolutely. Oh my God. So there was like this Zoom reunion that we did maybe a year ago, and I was instrumental in making that happen. And so I'm always down. I've been like coming up with concepts in my head for the last few years, texting them to Jeff Davis.
Yeah.
Hey Jeff, we need to do this this idea. So I'm a huge advocate of bringing Teen Wolf back.
So when is it going to happen? What's keeping it? I mean, it's like everything's coming back. Why can't Teen Wolf?
I've been coming up with ideas. I've been vocal about it. I think the only thing is maybe Jeff and MTV need to make some deal, you know, but I'm ready. It's starting to feel like what's cool is that Teen Wolf now seems more popular than when it was on the air. There's just all this folklore and all these people wanting more. So it seems like maybe they're just waiting for the perfect moment to strike. Right. But it's feeling like we're in that realm of it being the perfect moment to kind of reignite the Teen Wolf. And I'm always wanting to. I loved that show so much. And it was the greatest time of my life, dude.
What about music? So are you going to do a full album coming off of Shut Up? What's next?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been recording for around 6 months now, on and off. Wow. And the idea was to do a full length album. But that was when I was still with my band name. And then I decided in the middle of that process to be a solo kind of project. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think it would make more sense if I were to feature myself with an EP and then do a following EP some couple months after that, just so that the rollout could be like a full year long. Yeah, that's the plan, man. I'm planning on actor music, filmmaker music my entire life. You know, I want to, this is my world. I love punk rock. I love being on stage. And I definitely, you know, want to do it as much as I can. So we have an EP. We've got about like 14 more songs coming out before the year's end.
14. Wow.
Yeah. So that's plan. Amazing. Maybe even more. So yeah, man, I think it'd be really fun once we can start touring again. I can go out and really tour, cause we haven't done that in a while. My old bands used to tour through the UK and all throughout the States. So I'm really looking forward to that when that could happen again. As of now, I'm just going to keep writing. I really want to try to merge the acting world and the music world. I came out with a music video a year ago. That's a 10-minute long horror music video. Mm-hmm. And there's just acting in it. And so I really enjoyed that aspect and want to kind of like experiment more with that while we can't tour, just try to be as creative as possible. Man, music and filmmaking and some sort of entertainer. That's kind of just how I want to be for the rest of my life.
Teen Wolf the musical,
dude. That might be it, dude. That's a genius idea.
Come on, I mean, it's pretty simple.
It's simple. It's running. Genius. It makes sense. Why not? Yeah, that's genius. I'm gonna pitch it.
I want 10%.
Oh, dude, you get more than that.
Well, sir, thank you again. Thank you for everything. And we'll talk again soon.
I can't wait, man.
That was Tyler Posey. Now let's go inside the pages of Variety. For this week's Just for Variety, I spoke to Daniel Nardizio, producer of Liza Minnelli's 75th birthday party. The virtual Love Letter to Liza extravaganza streams Friday, March 12th. The evening, which benefits the Actors Fund, includes celebrity tributes and performances.
It was very moving. Some of them got me to tears. Some of them got me, like, my goosebumps. I'll just say this. Lily Tomlin is the best email you're ever going to get in your lifetime. Is Lily Tomlin sending you a video of her doing all of her characters.
Well, that's it for this week's episode of Just for Variety. I'll be back next week talking to Jesse Tyler Ferguson about his new cookbook, Food Between Friends. Until then, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Mark Malkin. And for all your entertainment news, head over to Variety.com. Until next time, stay safe and be well. And please keep wearing your masks. See you soon.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.